Good evening, everybody. We're on the air. I heard we were on the air beforehand, too. I noticed Eddie and I, we were talking. So I have John McCowan on tonight. I'm Karen Audubonny, and John McCowan is first district supervisor. Right, John? Oh, is he up there? Up. Wait. John?
I'm sorry. Mute, unmute.
You're unmute.
Second district supervisor.
Second is not the first. Okay, second district, I get it mixed up. But which is basically the Ukiah Valley, is what I'm going to say.
Well, actually, it's essentially the city limits of Ukiah and just a little bit more.
So just
I'm
a little
more. Urban supervisor.
You're definitely the urban supervisor. And you have the biggest population, I would imagine, too.
No, they're all roughly equal by
population.
That's right.
That's right. That's how we get our districts. I forget about that. I'm getting back into the groove here. So we've been talking. I've been talking with Ted Williams and Dan Jurdy. I had them on the air last week, and we talked about what's going on in the those districts around the COVID and the shelter in place and everything being shutting down. So I think this is a great opportunity to talk about what's going on in the Ukiah Valley and the corridor there, not the whole corridor, but the Ukiah Valley around all this. I know that things are opening up. We're moving along with getting us into a better position to open up. I know you've been working hard with that. So I know everybody, I just came into town. I hadn't been in town for a week, and the locals seem to be excited about things opening up. And I know the businesses locally in Anderson Valley have been working really hard to get their paperwork in to get opened up. So it seems like the second stage is moving along. Do you feel that in Ukiah?
Well, yes, but before I go into that, if I may,
sure.
I really want to emphasize COVID is very serious. We've been fortunate in Mendocino County. We have had, as of yesterday, 15 cases, one hospitalization. But this is a really nasty thing. You don't want to get it. The fact that we haven't been hit hard yet may mean you're eligible too. So the way to keep people safe and the way to be able to keep reopening is for everyone to really stringently practice the social distancing. And I emphasize this just because some people obviously still don't get it. If you're going out in public, if you're going into a business, you're going to be around other people, not in your household. You really must do the facial covering. You must practice the social distancing, 6 feet apart or more, wherever feasible. The hand washing, not touching your face with unwashed hands. Don't go to work if you have symptoms like cough or fever, a lot of common sense things. So we really have to incorporate into our everyday habits of how we're going to be living for maybe the next year or more, because that's how we're going to get through this, with the most people being as safe as they can and the most businesses being able to open as far as they can. So I'll take a breath there, and then I'd be happy to talk about the reopening.
Well, I want to thank you for doing that, John, because I think that's really important. I think we're getting excellent direction from our public officials locally on the county. The state has done a tremendous job. I will say again, we live in a double bubble. We are very blessed to live in a double bubble in Mendocino County and in the state of California. And it's so refreshing to hear public officials say that, because at the national level, I'm just going to put it out there, we have failed miserably. I have good friends I have a very dear friend who's a leading epidemiologist in the country. And I've been following her. She's been telling me locally that this has been coming down since early in January. So, yes, we need to remind everybody, this is not a hoax. This is real. We've been spared a lot because we, as Mendocino County and the state, have been so cautious. And to be honest with you, it is going to be jarring, I think, to see what the repercussions are going to possibly be from this slow reopening. I know that the safety precautions we all need to take are protecting ourselves, because right now I think we all have to be on the defensive, like defensive driving. So thank you, John, for doing that. It's so refreshing. Yeah, and I know people in the county are, my circle of friends are a little bit freaked out about Memorial Day weekend and the beaches and things opening up. I know that's, it's got a few people freaked out. So, but we're all sensible, we're all community spirited, and we're all wearing masks, I hope. So, but it has had a lot of repercussions in the county. The, we, you know, we're a tourist, county. So I know we're going to be impacted with all the businesses closing down, the small businesses coming back. I guess one of my big concerns, you've been on the Board of Supervisors, as we just talked about, since 2009, did you say? Yeah, 2009.
Yeah.
So you've been around, I can't remember if you or Carrie Brown got on first, but I think you're two of them.
Same time, same year,
that's right, I thought.
We came on just in time for the last economic collapse.
Yeah, and now you're...
Then we went into a drought.
Yeah.
And then we've had these horrendous fires, and then we've had the PSPS, which we're going to be going in again. So, you know, I guess you could say my time in office has truly been a disaster.
Well, it's been challenging at the very least, the very least. One of the things that I'm really concerned about, and I know we haven't talked about it because we've talked about a lot of other issues on the air. They've been covering the COVID and they've been covering the opening and all of that. But one of the issues that I was hoping to focus on and giving people an idea of is our county budget. We have this huge budget, $314-ish million. I know from experience there's not a lot of discretionary money that we have control of as a county, that you can actually, you know, manipulate the numbers and say we're going to cut back here, we're going to cut back there, to, you know, deal with the lack of income that's going to be coming into the county. Can you, from your experience and knowing the budget the way you've done and been through all these budget hearings and things, where, what, as we as a county, where can we actually cut to save money on this huge budget we have nowadays? Got any ideas?
That'll be the discussion June 9th and June 10th when we have our budget hearings. You're correct. There isn't a tremendous amount of leeway for, I mean, there's not a lot of discretionary money that comes into the county. The adopted budget out of the 314 or so million, 71 million approximately is discretionary, and out of that we fund all of the public safety, so sheriff, jail, probation, district attorney, public defender, alternate defender, juvenile hall, takes up a huge portion of that so-called discretionary funding, and then we have a little bit left over for roads and a few other things, but the amount of money that we have direct control over is limited. What will also happen is, because much of the state realignment money for social services, for law enforcement, comes from sales tax, and obviously that's taking a huge hit at the state level. So the non-general funded departments like HHSA are unfortunately also going to see some budget hits from declining revenue coming into the state. We really don't know how all that's going to shake out yet. It's going to be a very difficult budget year. I think we're going to have to obviously be doing everything we can to be more efficient about how we do things. One tiny silver lining out of this, currently we have quite a few people working at home. I haven't asked the exact numbers, but I've always been an advocate of allowing people to work at home if they can maintain the appropriate workload and quality. So I've been asking for years, could we measure how many units of a particular thing, whether it's applications for a particular benefit or building permits, whatever it might be, how long does it take to crank those out on average? How many should be completed in a work week? And if an employee can exceed that benchmark, you get to work from home. And honestly, I'm not so concerned if they're punching the clock for 8 hours exactly. If they're getting more work done than we would expect in a normal work day, I'm happy. So that's a benefit to the employee. It can potentially have some cost reductions for the county as well. And as we hopefully apply technology to more and more county processes, we should become more efficient. Each employee can complete more tasks with less time. That's the direction we're going to have to go if we're going to be able to continue to provide the level of service that the public needs.
Well, I will say that the businesses that are trying to get reopened are doing a lot of this paperwork online, and I saw some quotes today on Facebook that it's being very, very quick and very easy to do. So whoever set that process up, it seems to be working very well. The feedback I've gotten has been it's been really working for the small businesses. Are you hearing that?
Well, you're my first report on that.
That's okay.
Great news. And Supervisor Jurdy and Supervisor Williams did work with West Company to help put that process together. And Supervisor Williams obviously is a huge asset to the board with his depth and breadth of technical knowledge. So I'm guessing he if it's a good process, a smooth process, I'm guessing that he and Dan probably had some good input into that. But West Company has been in charge of that through contract by the county. Very happy to hear that report.
Yeah, no, the people I've talked to have been real pleased with what's going on with the process anyway. Well, technologically, so I heard a comment, I think.
Well, and if I could, I'd like to go back a bit to the opening because...
Yes.
As we all know, initially it was limited to so-called essential businesses that was somewhat arbitrarily defined, and then we have moved into phase two a couple of weeks ago, I think, where you had limited retail but curbside only. And now, with the new health officer order issued today and Mendocino County's attestation document with the state was posted to their website yesterday, making us eligible to go further into phase two. So the health officer did issue a new order today. It'll be effective tomorrow at midnight. And then, provided businesses have self-certified, the restaurants will be eligible for in-restaurant dining on a scaled-back basis. The stores that were allowed to open previously for curbside will be able to have in-store customers. So, you know, that will really help them be able to start to recover and rebuild their businesses. So that is pretty significant. There's a lot of other businesses that are awaiting further action by the governor. Phase three would include, you know, hair salons, barbers, nail salons, gymnasiums. And the governor keeps moving his timeline up, I think, based on the obvious concern that people aren't going to be able to reopen if they're not allowed to do so in a somewhat timely manner. So hopefully we will see further reopenings approved by the governor. But this is where it comes back to we have to be doing everything we can to be safe about what we're doing now. Because if the current reopenings result in significantly more cases, it could actually set us back. And you know, have to start closing down again, that's absolutely the last thing that we want to do. And you mentioned lodging earlier. We should hit on that at some point as well.
Yeah, the other one thing I did coming through Anderson Valley is I thought about the tasting rooms. I guess those are down the road because they're considered bars. So I think there's some issue with the tasting rooms, which affects, of course, Anderson Valley. Maybe the 101 has corridor has as many tasting rooms now, but I think that's going to be another big issue coming up in the next rounds of, you know, getting people certified. Yeah, the whole thing with the tours.
Correct.
Yeah.
The tasting rooms are not currently allowed to be open, and I think part of the concern there is they're seen as tourist-oriented, and there's concern about inviting the tourists in too soon. And yet, if we don't get to a point where tourist-oriented businesses, particularly lodging, can open, that almost means there's no local economy on the Mendocino coast. Because many of the smaller businesses, the shops and the restaurants, they really rely on the tourist trade during the summer months in order to be able to make it through the winter months. Or that's always been my understanding of it.
No, that's a very good understanding of it. These small businesses, that's what they do. I will make a notation that it seems like the Ukiah area, the hotels and motels aren't getting as hit as bad because they have more of the business trade going through. Is that a good kind of assumption?
Well, I do notice that it seems like some of the motels have a fair number of rooms rented based on cars in the parking lot, and I think you're correct. That would be attributed to essential workers that are operating in the area. Also a benefit both to some of the coastal inns, or rather motels, and the inland ones. Mendocino County has housed, I think it's approximately 230 individuals who had been street-level homeless prior to the pandemic beginning, and these were individuals who were either elderly or medically vulnerable, and also families with children. And of course, the elderly and medically vulnerable are those more at risk of serious illness if they do get COVID. They're not necessarily more at risk to get it, they're more at risk to be seriously affected to the point of death. Most of those who die were either elderly or medically vulnerable, just underlining that fact that these are folks that should continue to practice maximum shelter in place, that they really don't want to go out and be around a lot of people who might potentially expose them to the disease.
That is the defensive approach, I believe, to keep shelter in place, because if you don't have to go out, then you don't. You don't. Shouldn't. What are you hearing about?
Especially for the elderly or medically vulnerable.
Exactly.
And we just need to keep all reminding ourselves of these things.
You know, it's real hard with the mask. You slip. You forget the 6-foot distance. I don't come into town very often. I hide on the ranch. But it's one of these. It's going to be a new educational, social, I don't know, etiquette we're going to have to establish. But so are you? I'm curious.
I just have to say to that, wearing the facial covering doesn't mean it's okay to be within the 6 feet now. You really need to be practicing both.
That's true.
Because where the risk comes in, primarily, it's close contact. And close contact is defined as being within 6 feet of someone for 10 minutes or more. So even though you have your facial covering, if you're within 6 feet of someone for 10 minutes, you're putting yourself at risk.
That's true. That's a very good point to make. Shifting to small businesses in the city of Ukiah or in your district, are you getting a lot of feedback that there's going to be a lot of businesses that don't make it? Are we going to see loss of businesses over there in the valley?
These the survey that West Company has been doing so far doesn't show that a huge number of businesses are going under, but I don't know how representative that survey is. It's really a concern, and how many businesses can sustain a three-month or longer shutdown that they didn't plan for? I mean, a lot of the small businesses are operating the same way that a lot of households are. It's pretty much paycheck to paycheck or month to month. It's a huge concern of mine, and that's why we do see, a certain amount of discontent and some protesting. People are very concerned they're losing their livelihoods. But I think it will help that we're seeing some further opening here. But if this goes well, if people are conscientious about practicing social distancing in the business environment, we don't get a spike in cases. Hopefully the governor will continue to step up the roadmap that will allow particularly rural counties that so far are having less impact from COVID, but serious impact from the shutdown, continue to reopen in a sensible, prudent, and safe way.
That would be a wonderful thing to see happen, especially going into the sunny times, and I would hate to see a lot of empty storefronts in both Ukiah and on the coast. Back to the county budget, is there any way we're going to be looking at the state and feds for help? Is that money even out there? Is there discussion about that at all? I know the state is looking to the feds for help. Can we look to the state for any help, or is that even an option?
Well, good luck. Okay. I think what we learned in 2009 is we cannot look to Sacramento and we cannot look to Washington to bail us out. Obviously, the state, with a $54 billion deficit projected, going to have their own issues. That's why the governor is looking to Washington. I'm not sure how sympathetic Washington will be to the needs of the states. Certainly, Senate Majority Leader McConnell has not shown much sympathy for the states. So I think we have to assume that we're going to be on our own. Now, we're in a lot better shape than we were in 2009 when the total county reserve was like $1.9 million. And we have considerably increased our reserves. We have at least $17 million in general fund reserve that's completely discretionary. There's various other reserves throughout different departments, much of it earmarked for specific purposes. But so we're in a lot better financial shape going into this than we were in 2009. But we might also be looking at the recovery coming out of this might be very slow as well. Obviously, sales tax is going to take a big hit. Transient occupancy tax will take a significant hit. One of the actual bright spots has been that the cannabis tax revenue is still tracking with what the budget projections had been. But it's going to be a challenge to find the revenue to keep providing the critical services that people depend on. So, and that's actually one reason that I'm proposing we need to fix our cannabis program to make it more functional and more accessible, hopefully in time to accept at least another round of applications for people who want to participate in the legalized program. And we now have equity funding, about $2.2 million, if I remember correctly, that we will be able to use to help people through the permitting process, either to possibly pay some of the fees that they're faced with, or some of the requirements that the Water Board or Fish and Wildlife may put upon them to improve their infrastructure to protect the environment. So, you know, that's one sector I think we certainly should be looking at, since so many of others of our business sectors are going to be flat or declining. So,
well, it wouldn't be the first time that our agricultural products in the county have shifted. When I first moved to this county back in the 70s, it was apples and pears, and that shifted to grapes, and then came, you know, cannabis. So it is an agricultural product, and we have shifted the focus on the county many times over the 40-some years I've been here. Let's go. I want to talk more about the cannabis thing, because I think that is probably one of the bright spots for our community and our county for getting some money in. But I just want to go back to the budget again with, I know, so the reserve we have, I talked with Ted and, last week, was that it was $37 million, but as you said, there's only some of that that's discretionary that you guys actually, the supervisors, can actually work with, because the other, it's committed funds. I guess one of the things is that they were talking about not filling staff positions that are vacant now, so you don't do a lot of new hires. And that would be one way of doing it. It sounds like a lot of potholes are not going to get filled, because that's where we have some discretionary funds that we don't necessarily are committed to. Health and safety issues with the sheriff and stuff, that's going to be hard to cut back on. So I guess, I don't know, do we just pull back in on those lines? What I'm trying to find out is, are there grants available? I know, I think the city of Fort Bragg was looking at getting some block grants and that kind of thing. I'm wondering if that's even an option for us as a county as a whole, or is that more of a city thing?
Oh, no, the county is also eligible for the Community Development Block Grant Program, and various of the cities and the counties have successfully used that program, but you can't use the money to fund your ongoing operations.
Oh, okay.
The county does use CDBG funding in large part to fund the West Business Development Center. It can be used to fund projects in economically depressed areas, which is pretty much the entire county. So potentially you can use it to build infrastructure projects and things like that. So, you know, it's a useful tool. It brings revenue into the county to circulate in the community, but it won't help us with our ongoing operations. You're correct. One of the main areas we will look to is a hiring freeze. We've had a hiring freeze in place for nearly a year. It's been at the discretion of CEO Angelo to continue to fill positions that are considered mission critical. This will certainly be part of the budget discussion. I think there will be some interest in having a hard hiring freeze. No positions will be filled. I'm not particularly an advocate of that. I think not all positions are created equally, and there may be some positions that they really are mission critical and you really do want to have them filled, but we're going to have to be taking a hard look at everything. I think we're not going to see a lot of new projects, new contracts. One thing I think we could look at cutting back on, we have a pretty hefty contract for outside legal services. Just everything needs to be on the table for scrutiny.
Okay, and the budget, are they going to be having like budget discussions and workshops and stuff coming up? I know it's kind of hinged on what the state's going to do, and when they realign their budget in June is what I'm under the assumption of, correct? We have to kind of know what the state's going to give us before we can start planning.
Well, we're going to start. We do have budget hearings coming up June 9th and 10th. Now, we do have to have an adopted balanced budget is a requirement that counties and cities are faced with that the state is not. They make different rules for themselves sometimes. But, you know, it'll be something that we will be revisiting constantly throughout the year, and myself only until January, and then we're going to have a couple of new board members. But the budget will be heavily monitored throughout the year, and adjustments will be made going forward. Certainly once we know exactly what the state's going to be doing, we're going to have the budget back in front of us for review and adjustment. I think that's just going to be part of the new normal.
Just realigning it constantly, staying on top of it constantly to see what's coming in and what's not going on. I'm just going to take a minute to reintroduce. I'm Karen Ottoboni. You're listening to the Thursday evening show. I don't even know what it's called, except I came in to help out tonight. And with me is John McCown. He's the second district supervisor, which is basically the Ukiah area. He's been a supervisor for, many years now, 12 years. And he's getting ready to leave, but he has such a wealth of knowledge. I wanted to get him on to see what the perspective is about what's going on with the county, because we are going to be going into some difficult times. We're going to have to be tightening our budget as all the households are tightening their budgets in the county. But one of the things you did bring up, which is an important point, is one of the new industries that has become legalized and taxed is the cannabis industry. And I haven't been following all the machinations about the permits and getting people legal and all of that, because I kind of stepped out of that genre when I stopped doing radio a few years ago. But I know you've been in the thick of it from the beginning. And I guess my outside, just looking at it from the outside and not being involved, is that it was like it's such an encumbersome process that it's not bringing in the majority of the growers and cannabis producers in the county. It seems like unless you go big and have the money to jump into this, you know, taxable, regulated process, you sit on the outside of it. And that's kind of the perspective I've had. So educate me, John. Is it as difficult and hard as I've heard people say and I've read about?
It might be harder.
Okay.
And it's,
all right. Good to know.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a combination of the state and also our local ordinance, and it's a challenge for people to get through the process. It's very cumbersome, very time-consuming. It can be very expensive. And then the fact you have to go through the county system, then you have to go through the state system, it's very daunting. And I personally continue to believe that the highest cost is clearly on the state when you start adding up not only the fees that they charge to the water board and et cetera, but also the fact that the water board can come in and say, gosh, these culverts, they've worked perfectly fine for you for 50 years, but we don't think they meet the 100-year flood standard. So they direct that culverts be torn out that have never overtopped or created erosion in 50 years just because they think it's too small based by their calculation. That can run into thousands and thousands of dollars pretty quickly. So it's a very cumbersome and expensive process to come into compliance. These are all new costs they were never faced with when they were simply cultivating underground. And you got to wonder, these people must really want to be legal if they're coming forward and taking on all these barriers. And frankly, some who are in the process probably wouldn't do it if they had it to do over again. So what I propose, let's simplify the process. Let's quit tinkering with the current county cultivation ordinance, and let's repeal it. And the county can get out of the cannabis permitting business, since you have to get a permit from the state anyway. They have to go through all of the proving where their water comes from and every other requirement in the law. And let's regulate it from the county side as a land use activity through the zoning code. And there would be certain things that you would want to carry over, the setbacks, the prohibition in residential zones, which, again, is currently in the zoning code. That would stay there. The current limitations on exemptions, the setbacks from youth-oriented facilities, et cetera. So some of those protective measures that people rely on would remain, but there are pages of county-specific regulations in our current ordinance that are very difficult to navigate and understand. And as somebody who helped write it, I can testify to how complicated it is. And every aspect of that, there was some objectively reasonable justification for putting it in there. Many of the things were put in there to be able to help people qualify. But I think 3 years down the road from when we adopted it, it's worth a fresh look. And again, I would start by repealing the current county cultivation ordinance, regulate it as a land use activity, primarily through administrative permits and use permits. Let the state be in charge of issuing the cultivation permits. The biggest challenge will be figuring out how to transition the existing applicants from the old system into the new. And I was talking with staff recently, and they've got some ideas on that. I didn't have time to go over that with them, but I met with all of the key cannabis staff about a week ago. They were very enthusiastic about moving in a new direction. And I think if we do that and we can get this new system in place in time for people who have, you know, so up until now, only legacy cultivators have been able to apply. When we open it up again, and originally it was scheduled to be January 1st of this year, then we pushed it back to July 1st. On May 5th, we changed that to push it back to April 1st of 2021. But if we can get this program reworked, simplified, streamlined, and get that in place in time to reopen it for the 2020-2021 cultivation season, I think it could be an economic boon for the county, again, because the cannabis tax revenue is one of the few line items that is meeting projections. So we need to retain what we have there and lay the groundwork to increase it for those people who can come into the system, operate responsibly, and also help provide employment.
So after all these years of working on all these regulations, because you've been at the forefront of this, I know you kept up with this. I just stopped paying attention. So after all the years of being in the thick of this, now you think we should just chuck it and make it simpler? That's the way to do it. Seriously.
In a nutshell.
In a
yes.
Nutshell. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is new information to me. I'm kind of surprised. But so the state...
Well, I'll give you a tip, Karen. If you go to the May 19th Board of Supervisors agenda, item 6A, Supervisors Reports, you'll find a report from me. And originally, I had this on the agenda for May 19th, and... there was one of my colleagues that didn't appreciate that, and somehow he was able to pull it from the agenda. But so anyway, I make my little report with my little chronology, and then I attached it to the agenda item that was going to come forward on May 19th. We discussed that on May 19th, and I'm told it will now be on the June 10th agenda.
Okay.
So June 10th, the board is going to have the opportunity to give policy direction. Do we want to go in a new direction?
Interesting. Okay, well, I'll definitely go back and review that, and because it's a big issue. I mean, it seems like it's one of the few agricultural or one of the few opportunities for this county to bring in revenue. I mean, I'm hearing stories from, you know, Oregon and Colorado and all these states that have been doing it that are just phenomenal. And considering that, you know, the industry kind of started here at the Emerald Triangle, it's always been baffling to me how we're so behind in actually codifying it and getting revenue from it. It's always been fascinating to me that we just couldn't get it together as a state even. I'm not saying just a county, at the state. So what happens at the state level with all these terrible or all these complicated requirements and permits and stuff? If that's still in place, is that still going to make it difficult for the small mom-and-pa growers that have been here forever to get into the system and do it right and legally? Is that just too cumbersome?
You know, the state's a given. You're always going to have to deal with the state, whatever that regulation is, whether we have anything or not. But taking us out of the picture does, I think, help with the state level as well. Mendocino County has, I think, a perfectly acceptable environmental document that calculated the impacts of our cannabis program. Any legacy cultivator out there, per our document, can go up to 10,000 square feet. There's no significant environmental impact. 10,000 square feet is less than a quarter of an acre. It's a very small amount of land. And that's the biggest permit we currently allow in Mendocino County. So there's no threat to the environment, and yet the state doesn't think that our environmental review is sufficient. They would like to see either an EIR or site-specific environmental review for every permit. I think by going in this new direction, and I've talked with staff, we could come up with an expedited administrative permit that would provide full environmental review consistent with CEQA. And so we would be satisfying the state, and we would, I think, resolve a lot of the issues that currently hinder us in moving forward with the state. So I think by going in the direction I'm suggesting, it will help people at the state level, as well as getting rid of all the duplication and sometimes inconsistency that they're faced with dealing with two separate permitting systems, as well as the expense.
As well as the expense. And talking about expenses, for the county, if we did this streamlining that you're talking about, would that streamline the county employees that have to deal with it? Would it require less bureaucracy at the county level, is what I'm trying to say?
Well, we have a very thin planning staff currently and in the cannabis program. We don't have tremendous staff capacity to deal with the cannabis permitting, so that's one benefit of doing this, I think. It frees them up to deal with the administrative permits and use permits that are required already in many of the zoning districts. So, again, and staff, the reaction when I met with them, and they were way ahead of me on this. They've been discussing this and working with, you know, trying to envision how would this work for months. But they see this as a very, you know, positive direction to go. They are more aware than anyone else, except maybe the applicants, of how cumbersome the current ordinance is, how difficult it is to work with it, how difficult it is to explain it to people. And they've been very clear with me that rather than continuing to tinker with the same complicated, cumbersome, difficult to navigate ordinance, they would much rather throw it out, let's just use that word, and go in a new direction. And again, we would not be throwing out anything that is protecting the neighbors from the negative impacts that you sometimes get. We would be preserving those, but it would be going in a much more workable, streamlined direction.
Well, this is...
That our existing staff arguably would be able to manage.
Yeah, in less time.
Right now, they're struggling.
Yeah, it's been a struggle. I've heard nothing but negativity and cumbersome and costly and timely and confusing. And I mean, those are just some of the words I've heard about this. So we're coming up. We're short on the time, but I did want to just open up the lines if somebody wants to get in and have a question of John McCowan. We can make it a quick, succinct question. That number would be 895-2448. Thanks for getting me up on that, because I know it's been an incredible process to watch this happen, and I know it hasn't been being as effective as I think we all hoped it'd be to get money into our county.
One more thing I want to mention, Karen, as you may know, that we're going to have an ongoing testing set up.
Yeah.
At the Ukiah Fairgrounds, that opens Saturday, the 23rd, 7 a.m., 7 p.m. Following, I think it'll be Tuesday through Saturday, same hours. You can go to the county website and make an appointment. And I know people are concerned, well, what's that do for us in the outlying areas? It means our other available testing materials can be used in remote areas or going into facilities where the people can't get out, like, you know, maybe autumn leaves or up Little River Airport Road, you know, the name of the facility up there.
I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, but I know what you're talking about.
But anyway, you know, potentially the county is better able then to go out to facilities like that and offer testing to the residents and the employees.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. I know they've been covering it on the air on other shows, but we always want to cover it on different time zones. So we have a couple callers. We're going to get...
Yeah. I got to say it. The Woods.
The Woods, that's right. You got it. All right, so we got a caller. Let's get a caller on the air, and then we'll keep going forward. Good evening, caller. You're on the air. What's your question for John McCowan?
Yeah, hi, John. It's good to have you. I live 1.5 miles off of 101 on a dirt road. And I have two neighbors between me and the pavement. One has recently been entertaining some friends from Alameda County. The other one just had visitors from San Francisco show up yesterday. And I'm wondering how to handle that, because I would like not to have people from the Bay Area coming up here. But I'm just not sure... Should we talk to them? Should we, you know, nobody's masked. They're not paying any attention. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, good question. John, you want to handle that or go for that?
Otherwise, I'll go for it. Well, certainly, if the caller would like, they can make a complaint and report that. And, you know, code enforcement would respond. In the beginning, we had a lot of enforcement. Ted and I kind of double-teamed lodging for a while, because a lot of the lodging were initially, this was right after March 18th, so Ted was checking on coastal lodging, I was checking on inland to make sure people were complying. The sheriff, code enforcement, they were all very strong on, we really need to do this. The longer we go on, I think there's maybe less willingness to be kind of heavy-handed about it. There was a lot of effort with the vacation rentals and stuff initially. I think that's an area that people are probably still going to be pretty stringent on. But a situation like this where your neighbor is not using good judgment, they're putting themselves at risk when they're having people come up from Alameda. So me... I probably would not be calling code enforcement on that, but again, the caller certainly may. What I would be doing, I would be staying away from my neighbors.
I wouldn't be
going near them, because they're now at risk of transmitting the disease to me.
Yep, I just found out that neighbors on me, 7.5 miles back of dirt road, 3 lock gates, are having a big party this weekend. So, you know what? I make sure every time I come through my lock gate, I'm constantly wiping down the locks and doing that kind of stuff because, seriously, folks, we just got to be defensive because you're not going to keep them out. I'm serious.
Now, something like a big party like that,
yeah.
If you know they have that planned, that's the kind of thing that could be worth reporting to code enforcement because people are crazy to be having big parties. That's the number one way that this thing can kind of explode on us is when you have any kind of mass gathering. So,
yeah,
you know, they're really exercising poor judgment, and it's really being irresponsible to the impact they can have on the community. Because if these are community people, then they're going into all of our stores that have just reopened. It's just not a good scenario.
That's the bad part. All right, let's get another caller real quick here. Good evening, caller. You're on the air. Your question for John McCowan. Hello, hello.
Yeah, I was wondering about the, you guys were talking about the economy in California and stuff.
Yes.
And how we don't have much money and all that. But I was just talking to my nephew, and he said he came down from Oregon, and gas prices in Oregon are $1.60 a gallon.
Wow.
And then you come to California, and it jumps to, you know, whatever we pay. And it's definitely a California thing. And where's all that money going if it's not going to the state? I'll take my answer off.
Thank you. It's supposed to be going to roads. A lot of that money is supposed to be going to roads, right, John?
Well, the state and the county do get a share of that
gas
price
tax,
that you pay at the pump. They do get some revenue from that, but this is not a new story that gas prices in California have always, at least seems like for the last 20 years, have been higher than everywhere else. I think there's an element of market manipulation involved there, but hard to find anyone at the state level to really take that on and be able to get to the bottom of it.
They won't even tax the oil coming out of the out of the ground, so forget it. They're not going to go with that. All right, let's get another caller on this evening. Good evening, Carla. You're on the air. What's your question?
Oh, yes, the KZYX.
Yes, you are. What's your question?
Yeah, well, I'd like to ask Supervisor McDonough a question.
Yes.
I'm a resident under the shelter and over place. I'm 66 years old. I've been diagnosed. I had heart surgery. And I had a stroke within the last 3 years. And I'm housed at Motel 6 in Fort Bragg. Currently, it looks like we may have to leave by May 31st, which is very scary to me in my health condition with no home. And I'm really scared to be on the streets with Memorial Day weekend opening up. I do drive, and I do appreciate and concur to the social distancing.
And what's your question?
I'm just petrified at the prospect of being thrown on the streets on the 1st of June. And I was just wondering if the Board of Supervisors, I'm in Fort Bragg, will extend our stay at the Motel 6 at least through this busy weekend that looks like it might be coming up.
All right, let me see if we can talk about that.
Residents were really scared, and the staff don't know either.
All right.
So we're just scared about that, and we just like to know supervisors' thoughts on it.
All right, thank you. John, what's going to happen to these people that are housed and just limited?
Well, I would hope there could be an extension. I think this individual might be benefiting from Governor Newsom's Project Room Key that makes the motels that the county has been paying for at 75% reimbursable through FEMA. But we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars that have been spent thus far housing people in motels. The county is responsible for the 25% share. We've been using the governor's COVID-related homeless emergency funding for that. Again, I would hope the governor would extend this program further as he continues to extend his orders. So I'm hoping we'll be able to benefit that caller. Another thing that we are attempting to do is find alternative housing on a permanent basis so that people aren't returned back to the streets. That's what we're trying to avoid, given that these folks are elderly or medically vulnerable or families, and our staff has had some success there. I would encourage the caller to reach out to, you should be in touch with a caseworker from one of our contracting nonprofits. So reach out to them, make sure they're aware of your situation, and let's hope we can get you into a better situation permanently.
Okay. We're going to take one more caller, and then we're going to have to wind down. Okay. Good evening, caller. You're on the air. What's your question for John McCowan?
Yeah, thanks. Great show, both of you. John, yeah, I live here in Pine Mountain in Willits, and we've been very frustrated, the community here, because due to the COVID, we haven't been able to voice any of our opinions at the public meetings that are no longer public because of the virus about the cell tower proposal for Pine Mountain here. And we're very concerned about it for a ton of reasons. I moved here almost 20 years ago so I could be in beautiful Mendocino County in nature, and I don't want to be looking at or feeling the beams of a cell tower that would be less than a half a mile at the exact same elevation as the home of our family. So I was wondering how the county felt about that.
All right, we'll get that answer off the air. Thank you so much. John, what can people do about that?
I totally agree with the caller that a big victim of this pandemic has been public participation in public meetings. And we have struggled to find a way to have people participate effectively during the course of the meeting. But people can always submit comments in advance by email to the BOS public email address, which is BOS@MendocinoCounty.org, and those will be posted to the agenda item. We also have a new option. There's an e-comment. If you go, when the agenda is published, you go to the website. There's an option to comment electronically, including live during the meeting. But I would hope that we're soon going to have a more efficient method for people to be able to call in and, you know, go live during the meeting. We've had a little bit of that. It doesn't so far seem to be a process that's that easy to navigate or effective. So, again, I certainly hope we can do that. We are aware of the concerns regarding the cell tower, but that hasn't come to us on the agenda yet.
Okay, so we're wrapping right up. We got to get the hour. John, I want to thank you so much for coming on the air. We'll try to get you back on soon and keep up the good work. And thank you so much for all the incredible information you brought us tonight. All right? Take care.
Thank you.
Take care and you be safe, okay, over there? All right. Thank you so much. All right, folks, that was John McCowan, 2nd District Supervisor. I'm Karen Ottoboni, and I'm going to sign off.